now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast, the football podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and in the studio this week, I'm excited because I am joined by the excellent Tony Cascarino, the excellent James Scowcroft, and making his debut this season from the soon-to-be independent Republic of Merseyside, it's Tony Barrett. Good morning, gentlemen, and coming up, we'll be talking about events at Villa Park, as well as a transfer market, plus the usual quick hits. But first, let's head to the Etihad.
Fabregas, just to calm things down, Ivanovic, oh, he's giving it away, Silva's snapping into it, and Fernandinho, it's three! It's a chastening afternoon for Jose Mourinho and co. And Fernandinho, who might have been sent off in the first half for an elbow on Costa, has just delivered an emphatic blow.
City and Chelsea, Cass, we were talking before coming in here, and you made the point that if you didn't know that that was Chelsea, if they were sort of dressed up in different colours, you would have thought, wow, this is just a rubbish team with rubbish players.
Well, it was really bizarre watching a game by a team that's been so disciplined, organised, conceded very few goals, have gone through the opening two games of the season, conceding five. Out-muscled as well, not just outplayed, lacking a certain amount of pace in their team that stood out. It just did not feel like what Mourinho's prided himself on about the way he wins football matches. Probably one of the poorest performances I've seen from Chelsea, certainly in the last couple of years.
James, conversely, City were supposedly the team that, you know, they would have a problem if they played Yaya Toure alongside one holding midfielder. Navas was rubbish. Sterling wasn't going to settle, and yet they were pretty devastating in that first half, weren't they?
They'd have been devastated in the first two games, haven't they? They've come out of the blocks. They made a good point. I think what's happened in previous seasons, it's been a very slow start to those games, Man City and Chelsea, and then Chelsea just get an edge, and if they get the goal, they then park the bus. And I think Man City yesterday knew that they had to come flying out of Chelsea. If we can get an early goal, all of a sudden it gives Chelsea a massive problem, because they then got to come and attack. And I just think they caught from the first whistle. You know, Chelsea just never really got going. You know, I think the pace and the tempo that Man City played with, and to be fair, similar to the West Brom game the other night, I think they've been very impressive. And rightly so, with the squad they've got, Gab. You know, Man City with the spine in their team they've got, they should play that well as well.
Yeah, but this is what strikes me, James, is you look back to last year and Company had a disappointing season by his standards. Fernandinho had a disappointing season. Kolarov, who I thought was just an absolute beast down the left hand side, linked well with Sterling, had a so-so season. But what's different? I mean, is it something that does a footballer just? Well, I mean, is it really that big a deal having a summer off and then coming back and you feel better? And
well, they've obviously underachieved last season. For me, they've had the best squad in the last four or five seasons, you know, and they've underachieved. If you look at the spine of their team, for me, the spine of the team is as good, if not better, than any spine of the team in the world. Joe Hart, Company, when he's on top of his game, Yaya Toure, David Silva just behind, and Aguero. I don't see a better spine of a team, certainly not in this country, but in world football. So, and when they're at it, like they were yesterday, you're pulling a face at me. What can you name one?
Probably argue that Bayern Munich or Barcelona probably have better players than City.
What, better centre half and Company on his day?
Well, yeah, it's easy, but you can't have Company and not mention Mangala, can you? Or Demichelis.
But yeah, no.
If you, I'm saying, as right through your team.
You know what? I don't buy this right through your team thing. I think it's just one of those, like, people talk about spine.
Yeah.
This is a philosophical argument for another time. It's a crock of BS. I think it's just one of those football stereotypes that gets thrown out there. It's important to have a good spine, preferably a British spine. There's no such thing. This is a spine.
Am I wrong, Cass?
It's not what. No, but I'll tell you why. Because in the modern game, your fullbacks get more touches than your central midfielders. So, like, this idea that, like, you know, I mean, Lionel Messi plays on the wing. He's pretty influential, right?
Isn't this a sad football gap? It's all about what happens in both penalty boxes.
Okay, but what does that have to do with the spine? I mean,
that's down the middle of the pitch, isn't it?
I think if you ask most managers that when they have, as we've just said, a spine, that it's a dominating area that stops and creates, whether you're going forward or backwards. You know, if you take centre halves as the importance of them, it stood out last year with Chelsea that Kyle and Terry, for me, they were the rock in front of Courtois.
Okay, who won the title the year before Chelsea? Manchester City. Who were the centre halves?
Well, Kompany.
And?
Di Matteo, was it? Yeah. So, yeah, it's still. Well, I'm not arguing they're not the spine of
who
City.
Who the year before that?
That's what United? He's just.
Who were their centre halves? Seems like, well, no, obviously, like, you're
but
talking
Gab,
about spine,
and you include
everybody who plays in the middle, then you've got 6-7 guys, and obviously good teams will have better good guys in the middle.
It's the physical presence of that area of the pitch. Right. They're the big guys, they're strong guys, they dominate.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Kompany did. He was a gladiator. When we talk about last season, why did they struggle?
Obviously, you're better.
Well,
funny enough, you mentioned,
you just said Zabaleta's a beast.
No, I said Kolarov.
No, you didn't. You said Zabaleta.
No, I said Kolarov. Zabaleta didn't play yesterday.
I didn't mean yesterday. Before. You said from where things went wrong from last season. You said, I think Zabaleta is a beast.
A game's not won and lost. Wide on a touchline in the middle of the pitch.
Okay. Can you help me here, Barrett? And then maybe explain to me why they spent so much money on Raheem Sterling, who plays wide.
Yeah, I'm sort of in the middle of you.
No, you're not. That's code for saying
I've got a fence and I'm going to sit on it. I think the spine matters more in certain teams. I think the spine matters more than Mourinho team than it would do for Barcelona. I think that if Chelsea are solid down the middle, as they weren't yesterday, Chelsea tend to win titles. I don't think Chelsea, Eden Hazard will be the obvious exception to this. I don't think Chelsea win titles with what they've got down the flanks. Ivanovic, Azpilicueta, very solid, tend to tuck in anyway. Hazard is the absolute why, the exception to that. I do think Chelsea's about being a team with a solid spine. I think City's slightly different. City got more quality in wide areas. But I just looked at City yesterday and I didn't think it was just about what they've got in central areas. You have to ask yourself why they were so different from how they've been against City the last few times they played them. And I do think the Sterling's key to that. I think Sterling's created space straight away for Kolarov to run into. I think Kolarov's not getting doubled up on. He's not having to do as much defensive work, so he's able to roll forward. I think Sterling's ability to penetrate, open up the pitch for Silva, who's thriving in a little bit of extra space. And it's given Aguero more space to run into. I didn't think Sterling as an individual was fantastic yesterday, but I thought as a team player, He was key to what City did.
Tony, you made the point. Obviously, you were at the game. You got to hear the two managers. Mourinho saying it was a fake scoreline. And I'm going to try to summarize his argument, which was that, yes, City were much better than Chelsea in the first half, but it was only 1-0. And then Chelsea were much better than City in the second half. Can you make an argument here at all? Is there any way to formulate some sort of credible blue-tinted argument that if you consider that Fernandinho probably might have been sent off for that foul on Diego Costa, and then Ramirez is probably onside, that, I mean, is there any way you can construct some logical, rational argument for why Mourinho's correct?
Yeah.
You can.
What Mourinho said, and he used the phrase BS before, he wrapped up what was not an illogical point in BS, and that was the problem with it. When he said there was a stage when you couldn't see City going on and getting a second and a third, there was a stage about probably 65, 70 minutes into the game where Sterling tired, where Pellegrini started making changes designed to hold on to the 1-0, designed to keep hold of possession more, which was what bringing Nasri on was about. You couldn't see them going on and getting a second and third. And that, I think that was the stage of the game where he's referring to. Had he just said that, had he said we were monstrously outplayed in the first half and it could have been 4, 5 or 6, but there was a stage in the second half where you couldn't actually see it being 2 or 3. I think a lot of people would say, well, that's probably fair enough, but because he goes to such ridiculous tangents, it does just become that extreme view that people can't agree with. And it's Mourinho's logic, it's Mourinho's way of spinning away from the game and the realities of it, and that's what he does time and time again.
So last week we had Julian Lawrence here, who said that the problem, or one of the problems with Chelsea, is that Cesc Fabregas can't defend. And I got a little bit upset because I spent time with him.
I agree with that. I'm with him on that.
Okay. Tony, are you going to be mean to Cesc as well? I mean, and yes, I'll give you the fact that maybe defending isn't his strong suit. But then again, he's alongside Matic, who looks half the player he was in the first half of the season. He's got Ivanovic, who's getting killed at the back. I mean, there's all sorts of mitigating circumstances, right? I mean, is Cesc really the problem here?
Well, people are skipping past him. I think if you look at the James touched on...
But it's not like he was Roy Keane last year, right?
No, I think, look, Cesc is a fantastic footballer. If he adds more going forward to than he does defensively, then you want a winner. Now, in the opening, what was it? How long did it take, James? Just a minute when Cesc gets skipped past? You know, for the opening chance for Aguero? Now, that is the opening start of the game. Now, Matic as well is not playing as well. And I don't know which way. It just feels you can't put the two of them together at the moment. It just feels like that. And likewise, it feels like Ivanovic is getting skipped past because he's had 2 weeks of wingers just literally taking him down, you know, getting past him. Sterling didn't do it as much as Montero, but he's still done it enough times where that caused Chelsea a lot of problems. See, yes, Chelsea got 2 or 3 players in their team that are getting skipped past. And that, if you had that against Man City, you're in trouble because they got too many players when they get on the back of you who are going to either open the game up or just cause havoc.
Ollie Kay suggested on Twitter, James, that he should have played, maybe an alternative could have been playing Zuma in midfield, dropping Ramirez.
No,
to me it seemed like an alternative that Mourinho might pick, but it seems like a foolish alternative.
Yeah, listen, Fabregas is a fantastic footballer, isn't he? And I think for 90% of their games this season, especially at home when they've got to unlock the door, he is ideal. But I think in a game like yesterday, maybe his best is being a sub and coming on in the second half.
You would have dropped Cesc, not Ramirez. You would have put Zuma, another big perk in midfield. It's pretty depressing, second week of the season.
I can't see Zuma as a midfield player.
No,
I just don't think he's good enough.
Matic needs help. I think he's. If you look for the first goal, he goes chasing the ball. He needs somebody alongside him so he can have a listen. Right, I'm here, you're here, we're going to put a block up here, we're going to defend Earth. For me, he seems to be chasing the ball a little bit too much and maybe doing a little bit of Fabregas's work.
So does that happen with footballers where Matic seemed to be able to do both jobs on his own last year, but now this year maybe for whatever reason he needs? I mean, he was superhuman, I thought, in the first 6 months. It's not like Cesc last year was this tremendous defensive force in midfield, right? And yet it worked.
Yeah, unless you push Fabregas further on, but certainly if you look at a lot of teams now, they'll play two sitting midfield players that. You know, Chelsea yesterday, just a little bit weak. Like I got, you know, you're going to criticise me here, just down that spine of the middle of the team.
Do you know what's so weird, Gav, about all this? Is that we're talking about the champions in 2 games in, and we've seen so much wrong that we didn't see. I would have said Tottenham away last year, where Chelsea really got a hiding at White Hart Lane, but you didn't see that hardly at all, even in the second part of the season.
Poor the second part of the season last year.
But they looked like they could get over the line, Gab, in a certain manner of winning games.
If you look at the title race last year, nobody really...
Yeah, we have to be careful saying it was a poor Premiership.
There's a perfect storm for Chelsea, though, isn't it? You've got a bit of ring rust that most teams get to start the season. You've got two very, very testing fixtures. You've got a couple of players off form. You've got Mourinho's antics and all the distraction. And you've got a defence that did need strengthening, which still hasn't happened. So there is that perfect storm. I think what we're seeing now is not what we're going to see in 12, 15 games' time. I think you've got to expect Chelsea to get over this, but they do look particularly poor.
Can I just add, we say about fixtures they've had. They played Swansea. They got 9 goals past Swansea last season. They took them apart. Now, they've opened the first game of the season, and they were very fortunate to get anything out of that game. I was at the game, I just felt, wow, even that felt weird, watching Swansea take Chelsea apart in certain areas of the park so often.
There's no question Swansea played very well.
They were poor at the end of the season, Chelsea. You know, they did stumble. You know, Manchester United played very, very well against them at Stamford Bridge, although Chelsea won. But it's like Tony says, you know, it's 2 games, they will get over this, they will come good.
But that was the game where Chelsea played like the 8-1-1 formation at Stamford Bridge. I was there, and and Rooney had that chance. And well, I want to throw something else out there, which I hadn't put in my script, but then I wake up this morning and I see so many papers are giving so much importance to it. And I start with you, Tony, because you're a newspaper man. This John Terry being subbed, is this at halftime? Is this a story? Or are we just, because I just assume guy was having, maybe wasn't fully fit, wasn't having a great afternoon, and Mourinho takes him off at halftime. I assume that's what happened. But people are making it seem as if, you know, the X-Men toppled Galactus or something. Was this really that big a deal?
But this is a monster created by Mourinho. He's never taken him off before, possibly never had to, but you do create that kind of sacred cow. I'm trying to think of the last time a substitution felt this seismic, and the last one I can think of was when Benitez took Steven Gerrard off in the Merseyside derby, which was huge in itself. But Gerrard will have been 26, 27 then, and Terry's 34. I didn't think it was the right decision. I thought Gary Cahill was disastrous in the first half. I thought Aguero spun off him for the goal far too easily. And there's another couple of times where he tried to get too close to Aguero, just turned away. And that would have been the change for me. I did think it was about sending the message. It was about saying, we've got a 34-year-old that we're going to try and build our title retention bid around. We can't do this. We need a young man. We know that Mourinho's not happy that John Stones hasn't been signed. He thinks that the offer should have went in higher and Everton should have been made an offer that he couldn't refuse, but that hasn't happened. And I think that's what it's about. I saw Graham Souness this morning on Sky saying just that, and I agree with him. I think it was political. I think the whole thing was.
James, I mean, the reason I'm directing is that James is like, I know you played for a million different clubs, Tony, so it might not quite apply to you, but when you have a club legend, and I'm trying to think of your era at Ipswich, for example, I don't know, or a guy who never gets substituted, like
Matt Holland.
Matt Holland or Mark Venus or people like that, right?
Steady.
What?
Go on.
Are you not allowed to say
James?
Venus? No, but James told
you're
us
being
in the
sarcastic
past.
Now, yeah. Go on.
No, wasn't Venus? Maybe I'm wrong.
Matt Holland was one. I think Matt played 300 games on the spin. Some
right, but
they're
talking about Venus being an old guy who played for a long time, right?
Yeah.
But whatever. Let's go with Matt Holland. When he did get substituted, or if he had gotten substituted, would that have sent shockwaves through through the teammates? Or do you as teammates say, like, oh, look, Bob was a great, great player, but now he's slowing down a little. Maybe the manager shouldn't play him. Maybe the manager should have some more balls. Maybe he should play the other dude. Does that happen?
It does happen, yeah. And I think it's a statement in several ways. I think, without doubt, it's a statement, I need more players. But I think it's a statement for the whole team as well. Right, I'm taking the captain off. I'm not happy of any of this. It's not the usual suspects that usually get taken off. I'm bringing, John Terry. I disagree with it, although I think, was it the first minute when Aguero went through? He did show John Terry a clean pair of heels, which he didn't see. I think, Cass, I had it in my career. I'm sure Cass had it as well. If you're 23 and you have a bad game, nobody really says anything. If you're 34, 35 and have a bad game, straight away, he's finished. He's done. He's
And 23, now, you need a rest.
Well, I want to ask about this because he's your fellow Irishman and fellow tall former Republic of Ireland striker. Mm-hmm. Niall Quinn came out and he said something like, was it on Sky? He said something like, Terry's legs.
Niall's a very smart guy. But I thought yesterday he got it so wrong over John Terry.
It's a strange comment, wasn't it?
It was a strange thing. He's finished. We won't see him again. He was talking like that, wasn't he? And I was like, really, Noel? I'll tell you what, there's 19 other Premier League clubs will have him if they don't want him, Chelsea. I thought Mourinho got it wrong. Should never have took him off because, like what Tony said and James, he didn't warrant being taken off. There was far worse out there than him. Now, Mourinho spent all last week, it felt like that he was being undermined by the club doctor or the physio or whatever, and yet he's undermined his captain by bringing him off. Not because he played badly, because you can't say that John Terry was the poorest defender on the pitch. He was not. And his argument was all down to pace. That was why he wanted a change. But he didn't look at Cesc Fabregas in the very first instance where the problem started. Because Cesc Fabregas gets span on by Silva and the ball gets played for. Tell me how many centre-halves, even quick ones, would have dealt with Aguero's half-a-yard movement that he got away. I doubt very few. Because Silva had his head up, he could see the pass. So I thought Quinny got it really, really wrong around John Terry.
Right, you're taking responsibility for your words here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So if he's upset, Niall, I have a word with Cass, not with the rest of us. Tony, obviously, speaking of centre-halves and speaking of defensive issues, Chelsea have locked up a full-back, Baba Rahman from Augsburg. it's easy to look at this and say, oh, look, he's going to be the new Felipe Luis, a guy who'll play the odd game at left back and Azpilicueta slides to the right. Although it might be more relevant given the difficulty Ivanovic is having. Maybe he can be Chelsea's new alternative at centre back instead. But the one which I thought was more interesting was Otamendi. Now, you're up in the Northwest. My understanding is, as we tape right now, this deal's not done yet, but certainly they're going very, very strongly in Spain that Otamendi is joining from Valencia. I think the amount thrown out there was something like 40 million euros, round about 24, 25 million pounds, plus Mangala on loan for one season. Otamendi was obviously linked with United for a long time. Did you see this coming?
No, just because everything that I heard from City during the summer was that Mangala was going to be better this season.
He has been better thus far.
I think that was borne out yesterday. I thought he was outstanding yesterday, Mangala. I thought he was dominant in the air. I thought he had won lots of big tackles. He just looked like a player who is settling in, starting to come to terms with what is needed in the Premier League. But I spoke to people at City after last night's game, and yet the Otamendi thing is something he wanted to do. Although the fee does seem on the heavy side for me, which is probably to do with the shortage of top quality centre backs in European football at the minute. But the kind of feeling I got was that Mangala won't be part of the deal. I think the idea is that he will be one of three first choice centre backs alongside. And I think Otamendi coming in is larger because Kompany has shown a lot of physical frailties over the last couple of years. And that's what the entire deal is about. But Mangala's not going to be part of it, from what I understand.
Shaw has it now. Matter a second time. Nice ball, Yanazai with the drag back, and the goal. 20-year-old Adnan Yanazai takes it very nicely. His first goal for Manchester United for some 27 games and 16 months.
We had the debut of Friday Night Football, which I'm sure we all love. Actually, I loved it a little bit less because it was scheduled up against a debut of Bayern Munich this season. So I had to watch several games at once, which wasn't really a problem. But United make it 2 of 2. They still have major freaking issues shooting.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On goal, James, but they have 6 points. So, are you looking forward with cautious pride and optimism?
Not really, no.
You're so negative.
I've seen both United games. I was in United away end on Friday night watching a game, and it was interesting that a lot of the hardcore support aren't having Mr. Van Gaal at the moment.
Really?
Yeah, which surprised me because they're usually quite patient, and they're very patient with David Moyes, but just seems to be a few grumblings with Van Gaal. Yeah. Tactically, I think he's very good. On Friday night, they got the goal and they just strangled the game. They just killed the life out of Aston Villa. But to watch, entertainment value isn't very good at the moment. You're just worried, like you say, yesterday. You look at the quality of the game yesterday, although Chelsea were below par, at this moment in time, I cannot see Man United living with either of those two teams.
Do they need to buy another centre-forward?
They need to buy...
Or can Wayne Rooney play up front on his own?
Wayne Rooney can play up front on his own. He can play a lot better than what he has, but he can't do it all season.
Cass, I want to ask you about Villa, funnily enough. They have three new signings named Jordan. You can joke, but I read this in Bill Edgar's piece. Can you name all three?
Well, there's the fullback from Nice, but I can't remember his surname.
Amavi,
that's it. Then there's Jordan Ayew.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the other Jordan? Jordan, Michael Jordan?
Yeah, he's very good. Jordan Virtue.
Jordan Spieth.
Yeah.
No, but I wanted to ask you, because you've got a similar accent to Tim Sherwood. Obviously, he came in, he did well. There's still people who kind of seem to giggle. I don't think he gets the respect as a manager that his results might suggest. But he loses two big players like Delphin Benteke, I mean, around the club, how do you think that's affecting them? I mean, because they've been replaced by people that, you know, aren't exactly household names.
No, but I think he's shown his knowledge of European football, because he's gone round and he's taken people that he identified that he wanted in positions, and they're okay. They're better Villa. I think they're going to have a hard season, but I still think he's added pace into the team. He took the boy from Blackburn as well, didn't he? That's a big, powerful, strong lad that hopefully will replace Benteke.
That would be Rudy Gusted.
Gusted, yeah. I think he's shown that his recruitment skills by how he's gone about it. I think losing two such big players is very difficult because they were so influential to the way Villa played. Benteke was the powerhouse, dominated the areas, and Delph was the engine of the midfield, the spine of the team. So I just think he's shown that he can... I think he's gone to a lot of pace. He's trying to create a very young, hungry team that are going to be really motivated. And I thought, against United, they showed a lot of ambition. You know, remember that last year they struggled to get goals. They really didn't create anything in games. I don't think that'd be the case this year. I think Villa will get better. I think he knows what he wants, Tim. I always get that feeling he's quite sure about how he wants his team to play. And I think we'll gradually see that. And I'm a bit like you. I think he should get more credit than he's done. He's got them to a cup final. He kept them up from a team that couldn't buy a goal up until Christmas last year.
Tony, when I assume that Villa would be sold by now, but funny enough, they haven't been. When you look at it, do Villa fall in that category of clubs, like maybe Everton, who kind of in the new style Premier League really can't be expected to compete with the top four or top six unless they really overachieve the way Everton have done? Maybe fans need to recalibrate their expectations?
I do think there's an element of that, and I think that's sad for the English game. If you look at, I know Villa aren't in local ownership, but Everton are, and that idea that clubs can belong to the community that they sprung from and can be competitive is dying. And I do think that's very sad. I think that was what the English game was supposed to be about. And that may be a romantic, well, it is a romantic ideal in the modern world, but you want Villa to be competing. You want them to have a team that can get into top six at the very least. And I think it's actually fair than that now. I look at it, and besides when Luis Suarez had one of the most miraculous seasons I think I've seen from an individual player, Liverpool now fall into that category. Liverpool are now a team that goes in seasons. Can they get into top four? So you've basically got the top two or three places sewn up. We've had the top four places. People expect to be sewn up, and that anti-competitiveness isn't good for the English game.
So the best Villa can do is hope to become like an Everton or a Spurs,
yeah,
or Liverpool.
Yeah, I think Everton's a template. And that's the funny thing is, Everton supporters want change. They want their club to change because they want more. But Everton are the template for clubs to be run with stability and to be run to get, well, to finish fifth or sixth.
I think the big difference, though, when you look at Everton and Villa, is that, you know, Everton are in a certain part of the world. They've got Liverpool on their doorstep. They've got City and United, you know, 45 minutes away. Villa are, correct me if I'm wrong here, the biggest club in the Midlands, in one of the most populous areas of the country. It's an area that produces a lot of footballers, and where there's a lot of industry, you can get sponsorship and whatever else. You can theoretically, I mean, you would think that is an area where there's the potential for a club to become potentially a super club, right? More so than Manchester, for example, where you've got two of them.
Yeah, definitely. But it's the oil money, isn't it, that's come into, you know, Manchester, and certainly has changed the landscape a little bit, certainly with what's going on behind the scenes in at Manchester City. Aston Villa, if somebody would have come in exactly the same, I'm sure the same would have happened to Aston Villa, but it hasn't. You know, Tony's right. It's a shame that, you know, these football clubs can't be owned by local people. And for me, I think they'd be a lot better if they were.
They didn't have oil money, but they had an owner, Randy Lerner, who spent a lot of money and gave Martin O'Neill a lot of money with the, you know, and then they finished fifth
several
years. To
achieve what? To make them successful and then sell them, or, you know?
Whatever they were trying to achieve. I mean, they finished fifth several seasons. I think the idea is maybe if the club could have grown commercially, they could have grown with the younger players around the same time, maybe they could have created some sort of virtuous cycle where they could have possibly been a perennial, close to Champions League type club.
Is there an example anywhere of this happening, Gab? Because I struggle. I can really think of the clubs that have been taken over who've become successful, who've spent massively. I'm trying to think of one that's been taken over and has followed that kind of blueprint in its wake.
Well, you could argue that...
Crystal Palace.
What? Not enough with the... Why do you have to bring Crystal Palace up every show?
He's on about... Sorry, Tony, what was your question again?
No,
just that idea that a club can be run in that way, that it can be taken over and it can follow the kind of blueprint that Gab was talking about and be competitive. I just don't think it's happening.
You could argue, and obviously they did invest a lot of money, but Chelsea have been breaking even the last couple of years. They are self-sustaining.
But the cycle began with a massive investment.
And City as well. In fact, one of the things that I often like to have a right giggle about is when people talk about how wonderful the Premier League is because of all the teams that can win the title, and at the same time they complain about Sheikh Mansour and Roman Abramovich. Well, if Mansour and Abramovich had never decided, if you had a law that said no foreign ownership in football, right, then you would have had a situation where, which probably would have suited you, where United would have just won the title forever and Arsenal would have just finished second all the time and Liverpool might have gotten the Champions League. Right? I mean, that's what we're talking about. Chelsea and City were able to grow organically to the size of big self-sustaining clubs because somebody made that massive initial investment.
See, I would say the only club I think have spent an awful lot of money is Tottenham over the years. You know, Tottenham's been in a... Without
how do you say that when they've actually profitable? And
they've still spent big, Gab.
Yeah, but their net spend is positive. Yeah,
it's the
net
spend, isn't it? That's the...
Means that they took in more money than they
sold. Then you've got your recruitment wrong. You said at the start of this show...
They finished fifth last year.
They had
the sixth highest wage bill. I mean, and they were pretty rubbish, but it still kind of works, right?
Kind of works. Well,
If I have the sixth highest wage bill and they finish fifth, and I make money off of transfers every year, I could look at it and say, well, I could spend another 50 million and then I just lose. But this way I make money and I can build my new stadium and it suits me just
fine. Kevin Keegan's Newcastle was lots of spending. You know, they didn't win the league. They come second, you know, but they spent a hell of a lot of money, paid big wages. You know, there are clubs that have done it, but there's a lot of clubs that have been, like Blackburn's, Chelsea's, even Nottingham Forest in the late 70s.
Newcastle haven't done it.
Well, no, they have spent lots of money.
Yeah, I know, but
under
they never became self-sustaining. That's what I'm saying. Chelsea, partly because of the boom in commercial revenues and sponsorship, whatever, Chelsea and City, to some degree, have managed to spend enormous amounts of money and reach some level of self-sustainability. Hmm. Newcastle, maybe because they made some mistakes at boardroom level, maybe because it was a different era, haven't been able to do that. And Villa weren't able to do that. I mean, I think that's the... That's the distinction. So this is quite simple. I don't need a name unless you really want to give a name. I'm just going to look at the top six clubs because, of course, we're biased towards the top six clubs. And I'd just like you to identify what position you would add to, if any. You can only pick one. Chelsea, James.
I would go centre forward.
Cass?
Right back.
Barrett?
Centre back. I'm not a big fan of Gary Cahill. I think Gary Cahill, to play particularly well, needs John Terry on top of his game, and I don't think he can do that at top club. I think when John Terry's not on top of his game, Cahill sinks, and I think that's what we saw yesterday.
Yeah, I'd almost be tempted to say, actually, oh, look, another attacking midfielder so that they don't run people into the ground and everything, but then...
I just think they're too reliant on Costa.
And you're not a big Radamel Falcao fan. I wonder why. Manchester United. Let's start with you, James.
Well, can only pick one position?
Yes. I know, you probably had to pick three or four, but you're going to pick one.
It's got to be a centre-half, and bizarrely enough, they haven't addressed that all summer, and it doesn't look like they're going to address it either. So,
Daly Blind is your new centre back. Cass?
Centre forward.
Barrett?
Yeah, I'm with Cass, centre forward.
They do need a centre forward, but they need a centre half as well.
They need a few.
It's more than one. Arsenal? Cass?
Centre half.
Again, with a centre half?
No, I didn't. I said centre forward last time.
No, but I mean, Arsenal,
centre half.
But what, you're not a big Gabriel fan? And you got Koscielny and Mertesacker?
No, I'd still say centre half.
He played Chambers there, no?
No.
No, no. Okay.
Centre half, Arsenal.
Barrett?
Spine.
I'm gonna be totally left field and controversial. Goalkeeper.
Ooh, you're not a fan of Peter Cech?
Because I think although the last week suggests otherwise, Chelsea aren't stupid. And all this stuff about Abramovich and sentimentality, I'm not buying it.
But he's worth 10 to 15 points a season.
Exactly. Terry said that. John Terry said, we've given a player who finished not far behind us, a player, a club who finished 10th, not far behind us, a player who will give them 10 to 15 points. That is how it works at Chelsea.
All right. Spurs, Cass.
Midfielder, central midfielder.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'd go midfield as well. Central midfield.
Interesting again.
Spine.
Mason, Bentaleb, Dembele, no?
Although Eric Dyer's done okay. I'm not sure.
Barrett?
Centre forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. Centre forward, especially with Soldado gone. By the way, what a brilliant piece of business it was to sell Soldado. As awful as it was to sign him for all that money, getting that much money back for a 30-year-old on big wages in the current market. A 30-year-old who's done nothing the last 2 years. Mm. Tremendous.
You don't know, half of that might have had to go to Salgado to get him out.
Well, hopefully it didn't go to Salgado. Hopefully it went to Soldado, maybe. They're different people.
Are they?
But, sorry, it's too easy there. Liverpool. Cass. Can't say manager. I know you're tempted.
Well, it's obvious for me, goalkeeper.
Really? Mignolet's that bad to you? All right. James.
I probably would go with Cass. I think that's a good shout, actually, goalkeeper.
Are you going to join in this criticism of Adam Bogdan?
I think they do need a goalkeeper, but not as much as they need a defensive midfielder. But Brendan Rodgers won't want one, so I will say left back.
Yeah, one day you need to tell me what is up with Jose Enrique, by the way.
Enrique, basically, yeah. He was injured. He never got back in the side, and he's got a year left, and they're desperate to get him out. I think he's on big money for a player who doesn't play a great deal.
Yeah. Bit like that Italian centre forward they have. Manchester City, Cass.
Nothing.
Not even Kevin De Bruyne.
No.
All right.
You could nitpick maybe a right-sided player if but Neves was good yesterday.
Well, a third centre forward, no more. Barrett.
No, I think it's more the identity rather than the position. I think they can get someone better than Navas, but he was good yesterday.
I know they got the guy whose name escapes me right now, but who was in the youth team and scored all those goals. But nobody thinks they need a third striker.
It's being greedy, that.
I think he's got no aspirations of playing two up front this year, has he? I think that's pretty
clear.
Okay,
but neither do Chelsea, and they have three veteran strikers. Most teams that play one up have three strikers.
The problem if you get a third striker is, are you going to go out and spend big money on someone who's going to come in and not really play?
They've also got Sterling who can play up top if need be.
I think Sterling's a great signing, mate.
Yeah, maybe Sterling is a third striker. Good point. Right, time now for some quick hits. Spurs race out to a 2-0 lead over Stoke, but then Kane goes off and the opposition claws their way back into a draw. James, Soldado's gone, Pochettino wants another striker. Assuming he doesn't sign Cavani or Ibrahimovic or somebody of that quality, will it really make a difference to their top four prospects?
Well, it will make a difference because it will make them stronger, although Harry Kane's a very, very good centre-forward. I think they need more than Harry Kane, and I'm not quite sure it will make any difference whatsoever.
So in Levy land, you say, well, it's not going to help us, why go spend money? Bill Kenwright gets some stick from a portion of supporters, but Everton take all 3 points away to Southampton, and Romelu Lukaku steals the show. Tony, if he plays at this level every single week, and if Barkley's healthy, what sort of ambition can Evertonians have, and then does that ambition include finishing ahead of Liverpool?
I think the players like that every week, they can have whatever ambition they like. I think the reality is he won't, because every player has slips in form. The bigger issue for me with Everton is has the penny dropped with Roberto Martinez, who spent the last 2 years bemoaning counter-attacking football as parasite football, when it's the kind of football that will bring out the best in Lukaku and will give them the best chance of achieving whatever their objectives are. I think they can, if they maintain this type of form, finish top six.
Notice how he ducks the question about whether they will finish higher than Liverpool.
I think Liverpool will still have a little bit too much for them, but I don't think it will be as emphatic as last season.
Arsenal turned the week one frown upside down with a victory at Crystal Palace. Olivier Giroud scores a pretty goal, and Santi Cazorla looked Pirlo-esque in the Pirlo position. Cass, you'll be nicer about Arsenal's prospects this season than your buddy Stuart Robson was last week, right?
Even the hardest Tottenham fans are nicer than Stuart to his former club. I like Arsenal. I like a lot about them. It's just that when we see them put in the performance they did against West Ham, you're scratching your head. Well, how does that happen? How do they get beat so comfortably at the Emirates? I think they're a really good side. I don't think they'll win it, but, you know, the certainty of a top four. And I think Wenger's got one of the best teams he's had for years.
Speaking of Palace, your mate Alan Pardew complains after the game that Lee Mason should have sent off Francis Coughlin. Now, for those who didn't see it, Coughlin was on a yellow, maybe a slightly harsh yellow, but then he goes and I thought he had at least two, possibly three bookable offenses. So personally, I find myself in a bit of agreement with Mr. Pardew. So, James, do you agree with Pards as well? Would it have made a difference to the game? And is it okay with you that managers go and complain about this sort of thing? Oh, you should have sent so-and-so off after the game.
Well, he gets asked a question, doesn't he?
Right, and he says, oh, I don't like speaking about referees. That's all he can do. He could do that.
Listen, the bottom line is it's not even a grey area, is it? He should have gone. I think, was it the tug on Wilfried Zaha? That was definitely a yellow card. Why Mr. Mason didn't send him off, I don't know. Would it have affected the game? Yeah, it'd been hard to say. It wouldn't have done, but I think Arsenal possibly would have had enough and maybe just packed out the midfield and would have seen it out.
Top 10 finisher, Bards?
No.
Ooh. Sunderland lose at home to Norwich and they call a crisis meeting. Tony, are two defeats really worth a crisis?
I think it's the nature of the defeats rather than the actual defeats themselves. The only thing I'd say is that surely someone would be used to this by now. They don't get going until real crisis kicks in February, March time, and this is just the way the club's gone for some strange reason. Whatever they're doing during the summer, they need to change because they're getting it badly wrong, and I don't think anyone's surprised to see them struggling the way they are because that's just the way it's been for far too long.
Well, no suggestion that Dick's in danger, right?
I don't really suggest. I think the question is whether he will regret his decision not to walk away.
Don't look now, but my man, crazy Claudio Ranieri, a former Times columnist no less, is top of the league. James, are you surprised? Is he just surfing on the coattails of Nigel Pearson's sterling work?
Well, without doubt, if you look at the run that they're in, I think they've taken 28 points from the last 33 in the Premier League. Staggering form. They always struggle to score goals at the first half of the season. They've now got a lot of pace to the team. They're scoring goals. I think they'll be all right this year. And fair play to Ranieri. He got a little bit of criticism when he came in, but he's hit the ground running. It's all you can do, win games of football.
Can I have a personal appeal out to everybody out there? Can they freaking stop calling him the Tinker Man? It was stupid when they did it back in 2002, which is 13 years ago.
He calls himself the Tinker Man now.
What?
He calls himself.
Because he's taking the mickey out of all you people. Like, oh, look, he's controversial.
He said everyone does it now, but I'm the originator. And he's right on that, to be fair.
But he's not the originator. It's the first time you guys saw it.
He got battered for doing something that was logical.
Yeah, by stupid people. By the same people who didn't realize that, like, Sir Alex Ferguson started rotating his squad in the mid-90s, but nobody called it squad rotation, so nobody picked up on it.
But he won games of football.
Yes, because he's Sir Alex Ferguson. You want to set the bar that high?
It was a Champions League semi-final that killed him, wasn't it, when he made all the subs and they got knocked out.
Dad, one for you. The Bundesliga kicked off this past weekend. Nobody's going to stop Bayern, are they?
Well, Cass, I guess you didn't read my piece in the game today. I thought if there's a team that has a shot, it could be Borussia Dortmund. They signed this. They brought in Thomas Tuchel, who is, I think, one of the most creative minds out there in the game. It's hard to tell whether the guy's a genius or a fool or a little too out there, but they were absolutely devastating on Saturday. And on top of that, people forget they finished seventh last year, and they have a lot of guys who, for one reason or another, had really bad seasons last year, from Hummels to Piszczek to Schmelzer to Gundogan to Mkhitaryan. If they revert to form, I think they could give Bayern a run for their money. And if Bayern also engages in some level of self-harm.
Will Bayern win the league, Gab?
Probably, yeah. They're 10-1 on. But I think Thomas Tuchel is definitely somebody to watch. Mm. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many thanks to my guests today, Tony Cascarino, James Scowcroft, and from Merseyside, Tony Barrett. Please press that subscribe button if you haven't already. We're going to be back with you next week. You can also join Times Sport Online. It's a £1 digital trial, and you get exclusive football, rugby, cricket highlights free as part of your subscription. Till next week, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.